Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with my constant companion and co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law. Today is June 23rd, 2011, and I want to thank all of our listeners. We've now reached over 21,000 listens and going strong. I know that people are listening to the show to learn about what to do regarding vaccinations and their health, whether they do need to have a waiver or an exemption, and Alan is the go-to man on that. So I want to thank everyone for being determined and having determination to take control of your own life and fighting for your freedoms, your rights, and your options in the United States. So tune in, because today's show is all about the shot heard around the world. That's the theme name I've given it, because we are going global, and we're learning that all of these experimental vaccinations that are being given to large populations are having an impact and an effect, and we need to learn what those are and to take steps and tell our legislators what is going on. For those people who are new to BTR, to Blog Talk Radio, you're going to find the chat right below the announcement page on the internet. We welcome your comments and questions. We only recognize on the phone those people who identify themselves ahead of time. If you enjoy these programs, please share them with your friends by clicking on Twitter, sharing them on Facebook, or putting the widget onto your own page. You can download the archives of past shows, and we've got hundreds of them now, onto your computer, iPod, iTunes, cell phone, or other mobile device for convenient listening, especially when the shows get long. You might not be able to stay around the whole hour. Our population does keep growing because we're talking about relevant news topics each week. If you would like to sponsor a show, please contact us by friending us and send us a message. A little intro about Alan Phillips, attorney and counselor at law from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He is one of the nation's leading vaccine rights attorneys. He advises individuals, families, and other attorneys, groups, and major organizations throughout the United States about vaccine exemptions and waivers rights. He is very active in legislative initiatives, and we've read a number of those over the air, and he is published internationally. I can go on and on with his bio, but we're just going to go ahead and get involved in the show and answer questions for you. Later on, we'll remind everybody about his ebook, which is another very popular resource for people to get started with this topic. So today, we are going to start off finding out what's going on with polio vaccines and this growing epidemic that is sprouting out in the Pakistani children of the world.
Well, good morning, or is it afternoon? It's afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yeah, for us it's afternoon, because it depends on where you are in the world.
Right. Well, good morning for everyone to whom it's morning. One of my two websites, as you know, Debbie, is the Pandemic Response Project at pandemicresponseproject.com, and I keep a running list of news items. I try to focus on, first of all, vaccines, but even within that, those that have some current issue or concern, and especially if it involves medical politics or problems concerning conflicts of interest, corruption, and so forth, because I think those are arenas that are issues that are pervasive throughout Orthodox medicine generally, and with certainly no exception, the vaccine issues. And I am, I guess, privileged to be a member of a number of different online vaccine-related groups, Facebook pages, and so forth, and other people's networks. And I get information across my computer screen on vaccine issues from around the world. And to have the global view or a global view of what goes on, I think is really helpful because it lets us know that it's certainly it's not just an issue here for those of us in the United States. We have our unique issues legally and medically here, but there are issues surrounding the world on this issue. And so I think it really helps. Today I wanted to take a quick look at some of those issues. And as you mentioned, starting with Pakistan, this comes from an article. Now, and all the things we'll be talking about here are from articles that are posted on the news page of the Pandemic Response Project website. And so this one about polio is an article from Daniel Erickson that he posted on Natural News. The title of the article is 78% of Pakistani children with polio were given polio vaccines. And Mr. Erickson goes on to, in the article, talk about how, for example, that medical data suggests that the polio vaccine has changed in its efficacy against the disease, and cites specific instances where children who were vaccinated sometimes repeatedly with a polio vaccine nevertheless came down with polio. One child in particular that he cites who had all of his limbs affected and had had the polio vaccine, the oral polio vaccine, four times. And then a 3.5-year-old girl had one of her arms and legs paralyzed, and she had gotten polio vaccine, what does it say here? I think said it had, she'd gotten it three times. In any case, they have data showing that a majority of the Pakistani children
78% is a high statistical number for, you know, this is almost like a crisis for them.
Well, it raises a question as to whether or not there is either little or no beneficial effect from the vaccine or potentially even a causal relationship. I don't have sufficient information and expertise to offer any kind of formal opinion on that, but I think it legitimately raises those questions in the mind of any reasonable person. But that is a problem. There was another article also talking about an infant death in Pakistan where the parents felt that the child's death was due to the polio drops. Now, the health authorities adamantly denied that, claimed that it's never happened anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And but when you have a child that, you know, appears to be doing okay and you give them a vaccine and then they very quickly develop some serious health condition or in some cases a child dies, it is absolutely a legitimate question to say, what was the relationship of the vaccine I just got to this incident or this death? And while it can be easy to draw a connection when it's always possible as a hypothetical that something like that is purely coincidental, that there was no relationship, that whatever was going on that caused an injury or death was going to, you know, the death or injury was going to manifest whether or not they'd gotten the vaccine. But when you have something in close proximity and especially, I think, with injected vaccines, I don't know what the ingredients are in the oral polio vaccine, and that would be a good question for us to explore and perhaps discuss.
Mm-hmm.
If you also don't have that information, Debbie, for us to discuss in the future, is there a difference in one of the differences in the ingredients, for example, in a oral versus injected vaccine? But given the ingredients of vaccines,
I don't have the list of ingredients specifically that goes into it, but the manufacturer is different, and there's the difference between the killed vaccine and the live vaccine. And when the live vaccine is given, which is done quite a bit, in the feces of the person who has taken the vaccine, it then goes into the waterways and it spreads. And so more likely the people who do get the polio disease, it's coming from the vaccine directly, indirectly as a secondary source, not as an injection or as the oral vaccine, but through contamination of water. And this is something I don't know whether anybody has investigated, but, you know, Pakistan has had a flood crisis as bad as African famines, it reports in the news. That is The Guardian. And this is not so far away. It was only in January that they had this huge flooding, massive, and there were so many victims. Then all of the water was contaminated. And so this continues this cycle of poverty and malnutrition, and the people are underfed. And then when you put on top of that the United Nations or whoever is coming in there to supposedly help them by giving them preventative medicine, being vaccinations, and seeing this alarming rate of increase of disease, you have to put two and two together and step back and say, what is actually going on here? And that's somebody needs to investigate. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are excellent points, Debbie. Thanks for raising those. That they were using in Pakistan the oral polio vaccine, and I believe that's what they're using in the international campaign now to try to eradicate polio in third world countries in particular. And that is with the live virus. And so it does raise a question. There are some people who contract polio from the vaccine itself and then others indirectly in the manner that you just suggested. And given the conditions they've had recently in Pakistan, it is really ripe for infectious diseases to become problems. The question, of course, is what's the most effective way to deal with that? And I keep going back to this instance in Cuba where they had tropical flooding and were dealing with leptospirosis and used homeoprophylaxis very successfully. It's so much less expensive. It's so much more effective. You don't have the adverse events. If it was really about protecting the people, I think every country in the planet would be all over homeoprophylaxis and other nutritional-based.
Right. The malnutrition is a major problem. If the human being is at a weakened state, they're not going to be able to overcome and throw off whatever is being imposed upon them, being the vaccination. It's going to cause these side effects, and there's no question about that. You expect to see, you know, when you get an inoculation, you expect to sit there at the doctor's office or wait 24 hours and see if there's a fever or see what are the warning signs, if there's inflammation around the injection site. You know, there's a lot of things that we need to be cautious about when we are giving a vaccination, because people can be allergic to the ingredients, for one thing, besides the fact that there's deadly toxins in there.
Right. So
you were saying that the medical data suggests that the vaccine has changed its efficacy against the disease. And so all of these, they have actually statistics and numbers of how many cases were infected and how many people of these youth did end up getting the polio disease. And so we really need to see whether we should stop this program from continuing or readdress it and figure out what is the best way to proceed.
Right. Unfortunately, the sort of knee-jerk reaction from the mainstream health authorities when a vaccine isn't working is just to vaccinate more. There's this sort of blinders point of view that, of course, vaccines work. So if you still have disease, you're already vaccinating, you're just not vaccinating enough. And rather than really taking an objective look at what is the effectiveness, what are the alternatives, what are the options, what are the choices here, but it's it's certainly a serious question. The disease appears to be a problem there. I don't think they would be vaccinating if there weren't some basis for that. There must be, you know, polio. I'm presuming, giving the benefit of the doubt, that polio has been a problem there, and that's why they're vaccinating at all. But it doesn't appear to be getting the job done at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, well, are there other places in the world that you wanted to look at?
Yes, and I just wanted to do kind of a skip through quickly some different issues and then focus on some of the larger issues in maybe the second half of the show today. There's an article in The Hindu, which is an online edition of India's national newspaper, that the title of the article is Vaccination Worries Back in News, implying, first of all, that vaccine issues are a recurring, vaccine concerns is a recurring theme in the news in India. And I can attest to that in that I see articles on a fairly regular basis concerning vaccine and other health issues
in
India.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I remember last year quite a few little babies died after taking the swine flu vaccine, and then the government was actually putting out messages to take homeopathic prophylaxis rather than getting vaccinations. That was government sponsored.
Yeah, well, here in this article, they're saying it's a Delhi-based report that says that the number of children who die soon after being administered vaccine shots more than doubled in the last 3 years compared to the previous 7 years. That would certainly include the recent swine flu pandemic period within these last 3 years, so they're saying. It's sort of interesting because just the statement itself, of course, acknowledges that children die after vaccines, and mm-hmm. they're kind of being careful not to frame that in a way as to necessarily explicitly state a causal relationship. But, you know, there's other figures we can look at generally. For example, there was a recent study published that looked at the relationship between the number of vaccines administered in different countries around the world and the infant mortality rate, and they showed a direct correlation between the number of vaccines and infant mortality. That is, the more vaccines that a country requires or administers to its children, the higher that the country's infant mortality rate. And the U.S. is a disturbingly good example of this. We give twice as many vaccines in the U.S. as the average of 30 other Western nations. And we are, according to the CIA fact book, we are 47th in infant mortality. And other sources have said that we spend more on health care here per person than any other country in the world, which is certainly believable. If vaccines work, if we're spending more than anybody else per person, we ought to be right at the top of that infant mortality list, or darn near the top. The fact that we could be anywhere outside of the first five, let's say, supposedly being having some of, if not the top medical technology and spending the most money and giving the most vaccines, there's something horribly wrong with the fact that the country that administers the most vaccines and by far the most vaccines is 47th in infant mortality in the world. That's just very disturbing to me.
Yes, it is. And we may be going in, putting all of our pennies and energy into the wrong pot, you know, into the wrong piggy bank. I mean, why are we not really pushing cleaning up the environment, the environmental toxins, and getting better nutrition and educating our new moms or about to be soon moms and dads too, for that matter? We need to have both parents very healthy. And to build up the immune system to be able to withstand any kind of illness rather than to actually, you know, homeopathically, we're thinking that these vaccines are weakening the immune system, so and actually causing a lot of allergies and other kinds of sensitivities to food and environmental stimulus. So these are the problems. We're putting our eggs in the wrong basket as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and some have gone so far as to say, so I can remember the woman's name was a French-Canadian medical doctor who wrote a book called Medical Mafia, where she asserts that the pharmaceutical industry is using vaccines to deliberately create chronic disease so that they then have a market for other products. And I think most of us would have a hard time wrapping our mind around the idea that somebody could actually deliberately do that.
It's very scary thought.
But whether it's deliberate or inadvertent, and I wasn't, you know, in a room full of people, you know, discussing these issues to see what their, you know, thoughts and plans may actually have been. But whether it's deliberate or inadvertent, the result is the same as if it had been deliberate, because that is what's happening. Vaccines are being used increasingly, and the result is, in my opinion, but also that of some medical doctors and researchers as well, credible ones, that vaccines are causing widespread chronic disease. And so, and of course, that does create an enormous market for the pharmaceutical industry to treat those mm-hmm. diseases. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute here.
In a global sense, you can think about those who are the protectors and those who are being protected. And when you have those who are supposedly your protectors, who you trust and who you rely upon for giving you good information, good health care, and established a good structure for things to be cared for properly, and they fail you, the people are now questioning all of this. And on NPR this morning, you know, you can look at it across the board. There was a person talking, I don't remember the name of the show or the person exactly, but he was saying about the corruption in the police society around the United States, that these are people who are supposedly going to keep the peace, and yet they're getting paid under the table, and the corruption goes on and on. And it's only the whistleblowers who stick their neck out to talk about these things and publish a book or get interviewed who may have to go into hiding. And so this is across the board in terms of the vaccination issue, medical care, and our large and small communities across America.
I think it's fair to say that wherever there are positions of power, there are opportunities for abuse and corruption. And it may just be that human nature, at least human beings what they are today, is such that given the opportunity for power and abuse of power and manipulation of power, at least some of us will avail ourselves of those opportunities, regardless of what ethics, morality, or law may dictate to the contrary. And we've discussed this in the past, how the pharmaceutical industry in particular routinely engages in criminal behavior, and they get caught at it on a regular basis, and they get fined in the hundreds of millions of dollars, not at all uncommon, but they keep doing it. And we can only presume that they do this because it produces a net profit and because they lack the self-determining morality or ethical boundaries, personal boundaries or professional boundaries, to do otherwise. That being the case, human beings being what we are, and that being the case, it just generally that it, maybe it's ultimately even true that power breeds corruption. I mean, maybe it's just not feasible, given who we are at this point in our evolution as a species, for that not to occur to one degree or another. But the fact is that it goes on. And that being the case, the laws should allow us as individuals to make choices for ourselves, because there probably are people of high integrity, high moral and ethical standards and boundaries throughout the nation's medical doctors and pharmaceutical industry and police force and what have you. But clearly, within these same institutions, there are many people who engage in or are involved in corruption. And the fact that it does exist, is pervasive, comes up continually over and over again, says to me, it screams to me that laws need to be in place that give us the right to make choices, whenever that's feasible, to enable us to not be subject to the fullest extent possible, reasonably possible, at least to give us the opportunity, with vaccines in particular, to opt out. Because they come from a corrupt industry. That's not just a personal opinion. That's a documented fact. You can go look up the Justice Department website and other sources and find out these civil and criminal fines that the pharmaceutical companies and other healthcare companies have gotten. It's sad. And it's not, as you point out, Debbie, of course, it's not just limited to pharmaceutical industry or to orthodox medicine and healthcare. I think it's probably throughout virtually all of our institutions and organizations to one degree or another. I think it's a human nature issue in its more most fundamental sense.
Which means that we have to fight even harder and stronger, because if it's throughout all institutions, that includes supposedly the Civil Justice Department. It includes the where the laws are being made. I mean, it could be swayed.
Well, and that's a good point. Of course, one of the most obvious places where you could get anybody to agree, at least generally, that there's corruption in high places would be in Congress, where politics is openly discussed and acknowledged on mainstream news shows as being what determines how things go, as opposed to objective facts. So we as a society acknowledge, even in mainstream society to some degree, that corruption exists and that politics, as opposed to the well-being of constituents, is what drives the enactment of laws and the development of policy. It's almost like we have, to some degree that we've become aware of that as a mainstream society, that we've actually also at the same time, ironically, perhaps even become desensitized to it to a bit. We don't mm-hmm. recognize, for example, that when one politician is caught doing something that reveals corruption or some serious problem in the political process, that probably represents many, many more who haven't gotten caught.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way, of course, to count the unknown, but we can see, for example, you know, the FBI keeps statistics on the number of different kinds of crimes that are resolved, and I don't remember the exact number, but murders, something roughly speaking, in the neighborhood of something like only around half or so of murders are actually solved and resolved and result in a prosecution. And that's the highest number. And as you go to other categories of crimes, the numbers just go down lower and lower and lower. And that's only the ones that the actual events that they know of. You know, how many murders happen where, or I don't know if murder is a good example, but how many crimes happen that never even get reported? You know, to bring that back into the vaccine arena, the FDA and CDC have both acknowledged at one time or another, and different figures depending on who's talking at what time, but anywhere from 90 to 99% or more of adverse drug events don't get reported. Of course, you can't count what you don't know, so those are only opinions and estimates, but clearly the message there is that the likelihood is that the overwhelming majority of vaccine adverse events and other drug adverse events don't even get reported, let alone compensated in the case of vaccines. But let's move on here. There's some other issues I want to get to, and time is flying by. And shall
okay.
we move on to some of these other articles? Just wanted to mention.
Sure.
The next one I just mentioned in passing because it's sad, although I have to admit I laughed when I read the title, but it truly is sad. But this came from China, an article that's talking about 4,000 goats that died after vaccination. I mean, sometimes
you
laugh.
That's not a laughing matter. That is nature.
Well, I was going to add to that. Sometimes you laugh to keep from crying. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know. Because we don't hear about, in the vaccine arena, I hear from time to time people talking about pets and vaccines or asking, you know, are there any legal ways to keep your pets from getting vaccinated and so forth. And, by the way, that's one of the very few short answer exemption questions, so I'll go ahead and answer that. In
mm-hmm.
U.S. law, pets are considered to be property. You know, animals don't have philosophical or religious beliefs, so they are not, although pets, you know, to pet owners, they're members of the family. But unfortunately, you can't exempt an animal from a rabies shot, for example, a pet, under any standard religion. I actually saw legislation several weeks ago pending in California that would create a medical exemption for dogs. I thought that was absolutely
mm-hmm.
wonderful, although I wondered why it was limited to dogs. But
okay.
But I thought that was wonderful. I don't believe it passed, but just the fact that somebody, you know, raised the issue and got it out there, I took as a positive thing.
Meaning that the pet owner felt that if they had a pet who was had a disease or some sort of a weakened immune system, they couldn't withstand a vaccine. I'm trying to understand.
Well, I think it would. I actually read the bill, but I expect
okay.
it would be something a veterinarian would have to decide, just like a medical exemption for humans would require a medical doctor to,
right.
you know, to recommend.
Because so often we take our children to have a general checkup or whatever, and they're due for a vaccination, and yet they have a cold or a tummy virus or something going on, the doctor is not supposed to really give that vaccination. And very often what happens when they just go ahead and routinely give it, that's when there is a problem, an adverse effect.
Well, there certainly are conditions that can increase the chances of an adverse effect. And I hear the same stories all the time, Debbie, where parents have a child who has a serious vaccine reaction, and after the fact they realize the doctor wasn't supposed to have given the vaccine because the child was sick at the time or had some other condition that the doctor should have postponed
yes.
giving the vaccine for. But
so what is the take-home message on this thing where 4,000 goats keeled over after a vaccine? What does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that vaccines, among other things.
That it was a goat pox. See, it's going with the theme. We're talking about polio and, like, smallpox, and here's goat pox. It's a highly infectious disease characterized by fever, lacrimation, salivation, nasal discharge, and eruptions of nodules in the skin that can have high fatality rate.
Well, I think, for me, it underscores the fact, a couple of things. First of all, as pet owners know, even pets are routinely vaccinated. Excuse me. So are animals in the food industry. You know, vaccination is not just an issue that we deal with humans, but we deal with it indirectly. You know, animals are vaccinated. Animals that those of us who are not vegetarians later eat, our pets are vaccinated. The same issues, you'll hear from veterinarians who are aware and have concerns about vaccines, that there are very similar issues in terms of vaccines and adverse events with animals as there are with humans. This is particularly disturbing, though, that you'd have 4,000 goats die. I've never heard of a large number of people, you know, on that anything of that order of magnitude dying quickly after the widespread.
Would that mean that there was a bad batch? They would just say, well, this batch, this number, take it off the market.
Well, the director of the article says, the director of the veterinary station said that factors ranging from the vaccine's quality, weather changes, feeding management, to a new pathogen could be behind the deaths. This is something we see routinely as a precautionary measure and or cover-up measure, that when there are deaths that are associated approximately in time with the administration of vaccines in humans or animals, they're going to immediately deny that it was just simply a problem inherently with vaccines, or that the vaccine even had anything to do with it at all. What we don't often see, or at least I don't often see to my satisfaction, is somebody who goes in and does a clear, objective scientific investigation to determine whether or not the vaccine caused it, and try to figure out what the mechanism of death is. That's something, by the way, I think that's very unclear. I think it's beyond any reasonable doubt at this point that vaccines do cause death in humans and animals. I think what is less clear is the physiological or biological mechanism by which that occurs. I know I was reading a paper from a vaccine court case where the family was awarded money that the medical expert said, yes, the vaccine clearly caused the death, but it also said that in the same report, the same legal opinion, it also said that, quoted the doctor as saying that he didn't know what the mechanism of death was. That's sort of interesting to me, that you can conclude that the vaccine caused a death, but at the same time say you don't know how. Of course, that makes the extent to which we don't have clear information on the mechanism, or at least that's widely accepted, there certainly are theories out there, probably only adds to the difficulty in getting compensation or in showing that the vaccine was, in fact, the cause of an injury or death.
Mm-hmm. But we'll see some more of these in the future, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, but 4,000 goats, that's a lot all at once, and mm-hmm. and very disturbing, very disturbing. But, the takeaway there is vaccines carry a risk of injury and death, and they do for animals as well as humans.
And it does not bode well for China, because they have a lot of negative press regarding their food issues and their toy products and other things that have caused a lot of injury and death to people, the milk scare and everything else. So China does not have a good name in the world market.
There certainly are a multitude
I'm sorry about that. I mean, they're doing good. They're doing very highly technological things, and they're way ahead, and I could say a lot of positive things about China also, but in certain areas, they're just getting as bad a press as the United States is on certain things.
They are, and I wonder how much of that is an attempt to sort of counter the fact that they are slowly becoming to own more and more of the U.S.
Own us.
They are increasingly so, and so it's almost some of these things, however true, assuming even that they're all true, I almost wonder if the publicity of it is deliberate and targeted, because there's so many things that are serious problems. You see something that goes against an anti-vaccine person or someone, like Andrew Wakefield, who gets all kinds of publicity, and wrongfully so. I'm convinced that was nothing more than a witch hunt. But mm-hmm. but then you get somebody like Paul Thorsen, who was indicted, and the guy who managed the studies that the CDC relied on to show that vaccines don't cause autism. This guy gets indicted on 13 counts of fraud and 9 counts of money laundering, and you don't hear anything about that on the mainstream news. So, the news is selectively fed to us to serve the agenda of those who are making those choices. But
hopefully the internet is changing that for people as they get more and more of their news and they selectively retrieve it. But still, you're correct. We are being fed what the higher-ups want us to hear and read and see. So
it's really important for us to be aware of internet freedom issues too, because there appear to be some attempts going on by some large companies to control that or get control of that. So that you see emails talking about internet freedom, I think it's worth stopping to read those and pay attention to them, because there's a huge issue there. I have even gone so far as to suggest that people not spend their time trying to argue in mainstream media or even to get the attention of mainstream media for vaccine awareness issues, because the manner, as you point out, in which people get their news is, has been and continues to shift more and more to electronic and not the 6 o'clock news. And so why not go with that flow? Let's get involved, as you do quite well yourself, Debbie, far better than me at becoming aware of and educating yourself on the social media, for example, and the tools of the internet for sharing information and communication. So I think we would do better to spend more of our efforts swimming downstream rather than upstream, as it were, because that's where the flow of information is going more and more to the internet, and I think that that's where we have tools to reach people more and better. I'm not saying we should give up on mainstream news, but boy, that's the mainstream news is a tough nut to crack.
It's very selective. Well, they have to pay for their commercial advertisers.
They do. They do.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm watching the clock fly by here, and there are a couple of things that I really wanted to get to today, but I just want to mention real quickly one article from Health Freedom Alliance that says that half of U.S. kids have one form or another of chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
And as many as 21% are developmentally disabled in one way or
mm-hmm.
another. And I want to spend a whole lot of time on this other than, but by all means, Debbie, chime in with any comments you have about this as well. But boy, that is disturbing. You know, it's like every time I see another report talking about the percentage of kids that have autism, for example, the number is, it's a higher percentage. Each time I see that, the numbers just go up. And this appears
mm-hmm.
to be the case. This article cites studies that show a dramatic increase in chronic disease and disorders among U.S. children generally, and in rise in the number of developmentally disabled. Surely there are multiple causes for this, but it's hard to look at that and not also look at the growing number of vaccines over the years that we have been giving American kids, as we said earlier, more than any other country. And there are studies that do show some correlations between vaccines and chronic disease. It's in my opinion, clearly a factor and perhaps a primary one.
Right, and I agree with you there. As a matter of fact, when I hear that children have chronic, not just an acute flare-up, not just a indigestion or a cold or a flu, but they actually have chronic, ongoing, long-term disease. This is very strange. That only occurs based on Hahnemann's Organon of Medicine. Chronic illness doesn't really occur until later on in life. And I think that a turning point that he has in the Organon of Medicine is around puberty. But if we're seeing this chronic disease in children and infants and in the teen and the 20s, these age ranges, there's something definitely wrong. And as you say, it's not specifically the vaccinations, although it's a contributing factor, but it is our nutrition, and the fact that they're not exercising, they're not getting out in the sunlight, the environmental toxins and pollution and, you know, on and on. And here we have all of these factors that we should really be cleaning up. Of course, your particular specialty is vaccinations, and we really should do something about it. You've mentioned it quite a bit on the shows and today's show about the increasing number of vaccinations. But this really is a very frightening statistic that our children have chronic disease.
It is, and, well, I guess I'll leave that point there for right now because I do want to just come on to get to some of these other topics here. But it's disturbing if I understood you correctly, from the homeopathic model and view, for young children in particular to be dealing with chronic disease, and assuming
yes.
they were healthy when they were born, there would have to have been some kind of pretty severe insult to the body to cause that, some sort of
to their
critical
life force,
permanent
is what we
damage.
Call it. Yeah,
right.
To their life force, that they are not able to respond enough to throw off whatever is caught, you know, this disease. So What's happening is most likely that the vaccinations are touching on, in homeopathic terms, the genetic miasm, the tendency and proclivity to have particular types of disease, and we're just creating this multi-headed monster, is what Hahnemann would say, of branches and branches and of all of these diseases that we now call, have names for, which he only had three miasms as the root cause of the diseases. But we're seeing it proliferate into so many other ways of expressing disease and disorder because we are suppressing it. We're giving these vaccinations. We're telling the body that you don't really know how to take care of yourself. And that's why people are struggling with feelings of not being able to take care of themselves, feelings of wanting independence. We want to be free. We want to be free from all of these overhanging, overbearing, you know, things like the going through airports and having to be searched. I mean, this is a very, very large issues in general, emotional instabilities, the suicide rate is increasing, the number of drugs that kids are taking. I could probably spout on and on about it, but you probably want to go to the next topic.
Well, I just wonder if and this is a compliment more than anything else, Debbie, to both of us, we never have time to cover all that we hope to cover when we start the show, because these are deep issues with lots of threads and implications and so forth. But I'm just sort of curious, one more quick point on the same topic here, that I would think that with an acute condition, you have something that most of the time the body is capable of resolving, even if it needs some support in doing that. I'm wondering if chronic conditions are sometimes a consequence of some sort of permanent damage that short of, if you have your liver taken out, you'd have to grow a new liver to get over that. I mean, that's a dumb example, but it says what I'm saying, trying to say. If there's something, some part of your immune system that is damaged in a fundamental physical way that maybe can't be repaired unless you could find some way to regenerate whatever part of the immune system that was damaged or whatever part of the body. Are there ways that does that condition in that abstract sense can exist sometimes with disease, and does homeopathy have a way of dealing with that kind of issue? Does the question even make sense?
Yes, on my Monday show, The Study of the Organon of Medicine, we were just reading about the aphorisms 201 and on, because we've covered most of the book. We're already up to the 200s in terms of Hahnemann's aphorisms to teach us how to rethink the medical system, how to rethink what is health and how we approach getting healthy, what are drugs, what are medicine, what are the consequences of taking different types of medicines, and how we use homeopathic, which are very gentle, rapid-acting, potentized medicines. They're energy that are based on giving a similar substance, a similar energy to the person who is in a place of suffering. And yes, he says that when we give the correct homeopathic similimum, the correct remedy to the individual, when we see the symptom picture, that will go deeply into their core, into their vital force to strengthen them so that they will not have a recurrence of their symptoms anymore. That is how we know that is acted as annihilation of disease and cure. The problem is when we go in, and he was talking about this, giving drugs, cutting warts, burning things off, and giving all of these medicines to supposedly temporarily alleviate the symptoms of disease, this does not prevent the continual growth of that sickness within the body, which is trying to express itself outwardly so we can understand what that disease is. And when we remove the outer picture, the external signs and symptoms of disease, we no longer can see clearly what remedy to provide for that individual. And now we have to deal with the drug side effects. And it's a very complicated, especially during Hahnemann's time, it wasn't quite as complicated. They obviously didn't have all of these vaccinations. They did have harsh methods of trying to cure people by giving mercury or other using leeches and other kinds of things that were not approved of by Hahnemann. But he would then take the understanding, like the cinchona bark, which he used for malaria, quinine. He saw that people were taking it in large dose to heal their malarial symptoms. He took it in dose, in form, and found out that although he was healthy, he began to have the symptoms of malaria. That's how he put two and two together and realized that homeopathic remedies, when you give the similar, it will heal the disease, because the body cannot have two similar diseases in the body at the same time. And that's another one of his aphorisms and principles of homeopathy. So I've given you kind of a little talk on homeopathy today. We went into that area. We've got about 8 minutes left. If you want to respond or move to the next topic, it's fine with me.
Boy, you know, of course, you could spend months on that topic, as you're doing on one of your other shows, and I encourage people who are interested to tune into that one. It's homeopathy. It's just an amazing thing. I would like to jump over here to one of the other articles I want to talk about that talks about a court case in Austria concerning vaccines. It's fascinating. I only wish that could be true in the U.S. kind of issue, but I think it does, at least in some small way, set a precedent or have some value to us, something we can learn from here. This was a case where a student had a pretty severe reaction to a hepatitis B vaccine. He had some kind of damage to his optic nerve and was blind or nearly blind as a result. And the Austrian court determined, first of all, that school vaccines are not legally required in Austria, and yet the way that they had been handled, everyone apparently just sort of assumed or acted as though that were the case. The court decided that there was not proper consent and that there was some malpractice, and that the health people involved actually were required to compensate this child and his family for this for the damage. A particularly, I think, interesting case. Now, unlike the U.S., vaccines in Austria apparently were not and are not legally mandatory, although, of course, as they are in virtually every country, strongly recommended, and clearly they're, like here, associated with school enrollment. But it was particularly interesting. The public health officer was sentenced to pay compensation for the vaccine injury, which I just find intriguing.
So is this sort of like a scapegoat? Is this like a person who is targeted to take the brunt of what happened, or what?
Well, let me dive a little bit directly into the article itself here, and that will give us the answers to that. He was vaccinated against hepatitis B as part of a school immunization program by the medical officer of the health district. And they were implementing a policy, a routine policy, I presume. But as a consequence, as I said, he had a problem with the optic nerve that resulted in visual impairment, and they said that a reduction in employment potential of 90%. That feels like a somewhat insensitive way of addressing the harm, but I know in the legal system in the U.S., the goal of the legal system is to make a person whole again. And, of course, that's not something that's possible many times through a legal system. And the way we come as close to that as we can here in the U.S. many times is by awarding money damages for things. Of course, So how do you calculate what a money damage is? Well, if he's had a loss of employment potential of 90%, then you can calculate some figure that he would have earned over his life that he's not able to earn and come up with a number. So that's something that's done probably for calculation purposes. But in any case, it's a significant said it was almost total blindness, significant problem. Let me find the section here where they talk about the arguments, too, because I thought that was really interesting. There was a significant issue. Well, first of all, the Austrian Supreme Court says that school vaccination is a purely private sector affair, that the fact of a school vaccination quote-unquote, didn't represent an act of authority. And there's no legal requirement for vaccination, and therefore no obligation for school vaccinations, which is going to rock the boat in Austria, I'm sure. Actually, this case is from last year. The article about it is
October 2010.
So, but the article that brought this to my attention just in the last couple of weeks or so. The court talked about informed consent. And here's what they say, and they did have questionnaires that students would fill out, so they were making a move in the direction of informed consent, but the court just said it didn't go far enough. So this article, and the court says, informed consent, it's especially inappropriate to talk only about the risks of the disease. Now, in this country, we're given a vaccine information statement as a matter of law, and it does make some fleeting reference to possible adverse reactions, but those of us in our camp would argue that it doesn't go anywhere near far enough. But they should be asking questions such as, and I think they also said it wasn't, a form isn't appropriate, there really need to be personal information given personally. It's not just enough for somebody to check off boxes on a form. So is the
because
vaccination,
most people don't read the form.
Right, or may or may not understand it. They don't have a chance to ask questions of the form.
Mm-hmm.
So is the vaccination to be carried out an intervention of an urgent nature? Is there a real and immediate danger of catching the illness? Of course, for most of the diseases, most of the time in Western nations, no, there isn't. Is the intervention indicated a matter of urgency? Is the student in an at-risk group? And I think they mean of catching the disease at this point in the article. How high is the risk of the disease? Can the infection to be prevented cause serious harm? You know, if it's the chickenpox vaccine, doesn't cause serious harm to get chickenpox, so, you know, that's another factor. The risks and dangers, what are the side effects of the vaccines? What's the risk? Are there serious, even if rare, side effects? But I think the thing that really stuck out to me about this article is that there was a strong emphasis put on our right to self-determination. And I think that's the key concept I want to leave listeners with today, the idea of self-determination and that we should have the right to that. In a country that went through World War II the way Austria and other European countries in that area went through, these are people who know in the most profound way I can think of the importance of self-determination.
And we should have learned that lesson ourselves.
Well,
so,
we need to be demanding that from our state and federal legislators here in the U.S. and anywhere else in the world for that matter when it comes to vaccines and healthcare issues, because clearly with the corruption and conflicts of interest that are throughout the industry and federal agencies, we just can't rely on our government to tell us what we have to do for our own health and safety.
So please check out Alan's ebook, and we're going to be back with him next week. And also next week will be in July. We might be having Greg Glazer on with us on constitutional law. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Our time is up. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people. Your truth be unfurled one by one.